Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Messy Minimalism, Realistic Strategies for the Rest of Us by Rochelle Crawford, foreword by Danae Barahona, narrated by Rochelle Crawford. For my children, Jameson, Reagan, and Amelia, you remind me every day that our best moments are typically the messiest ones. Foreword. Messiness had been a part of my life for as long as I can remember. For my first 30 years, I was drowning in stuff. I have a fast-moving brain that leads me from one thing to the next, and so I left a trail of evidence behind me along the way. 7 years ago, then as a newly married young mother, I felt like I was accumulating people just as fast as I was collecting stuff. My chaotic schedule frustrated the people I loved the most, but I was unsure how I could make a change to show my growing family a different way. If you are a messy person, you know the struggle to put things away and throw things out or give them away. Or if you are a messy with regard to schedule and commitments, you know how hard it is to tidy your calendar and learn to say no. Indeed, if you're like me, you've never dreamed that minimalism was something that would work for you. Yet minimalism has changed my messy life. On this journey toward a simpler life, I met Rochelle Crawford, author of this book. I quickly learned that Rochelle and I are kindred spirits. I'm thankful for Rochelle for writing this book. She and I are living proof that messy people can be minimalists, too. In fact, I would argue that minimalism is especially for us messy folk, because no organizational system will do the trick. We don't need a better way to organize and store all the stuff. We just need less of the stuff. But before you dive in, I want to give you a warning. Rochelle's wisdom won't end when you finish cleaning out your closet. Instead, you are going to find that minimalism has a trickle-down effect. You may be starting in your kitchen, but before you know it, you'll be simplifying your calendar, decluttering your mental load, and living your whole life with more intention. I suspect you will come to find a sense of lightness that you never thought possible. Minimalism is infectious in the best sort of way. Cheers to an imperfect yet simpler life. This book is a gift that will bring you guidance, inspiration, and self-acceptance. Danae Barahona, PhD, Simple Families and author of Simple Happy Parenting. Part 1, Becoming Minimal-ish. Chapter 1, An Outlandish Idea. Maybe the life you've always wanted is buried under everything you own. Joshua Becker. I don't like the word minimalism. As a self-declared minimalist, I'm probably not supposed to say that, but there you have it. While I love everything minimalism truly stands for, the word itself, not so much. Minimalism has that all-or-nothing ring to it, as if embracing it requires an unwavering cult-like devotion, as if you must choose between a colorful wardrobe or a bland one, between having a family or living solo out of a VW van. The first thing a friend said to me when I told him I was going minimalist was, "What, are you going to get rid of your couches now?" As if minimalists must take a monk-like vow to never sit for the remainder of their uncomfortable, miserable lives. I get it. From a distance, minimalism can appear extreme, uninviting, and even cold-hearted. If you Google how to become a minimalist, you'll quickly learn it's a whole thing, a movement of people from all walks of life who want out of the overconsumption game. There are zero-waste minimalists, cozy minimalists, essentialists, extreme minimalists, and those who are simply living minimal-ish. You can read about entire families living out of RVs, singles living out of backpacks, and retirees downsizing to only the bare essentials. For the longest time, I figured minimalism was either for cool people willing to live in uncomfortably bland big city lofts or those committed to deprivation, discomfort, and boredom. It just seemed unattractive, unattainable, and absolutely unsustainable. This is exactly why for so long I assumed it wasn't for me. I mean, I do like to sit from time to time, preferably on a comfortable couch. Besides, life is just too short to settle for less, right? It's meant for living abundantly, to the fullest, and even overflowing. That's exactly what I did. I filled our home until we were bursting at the seams. Now, just in case you're hearing this and thinking, "Lady, you keep using this word minimalism, but I'm not sure what you mean." Let me explain. Minimalism is the purposeful practice of paring back both our material possessions and commitments in order to create a greater capacity to invest our time and energy in the things that matter most. I had no idea it was possible for real people to implement minimalism in their everyday lives. My preconceived ideas about what minimalism meant kept me from even considering the very thing that, in fact, I desperately needed. I had spent my entire life living an exact opposite lifestyle, holding on to everything, paring back on nothing. I would need to first meet a real live human, intentionally and joyfully living with less before I could wrap my brain around doing this myself. Thankfully, that's exactly what happened. Finding less. That morning started off like most mornings. The only difference was this was the second Wednesday of the month, which meant I was at my church mom's group, soaking up some kid-free time, coffee, and cream cheese with a side of bagel. This week's speaker was here to share tips for healthy meal planning while, ironically, I stuffed my face with a week's worth of calories. Thankfully, it was a judgment-free zone because I was ravenous. As per usual, I had spent that morning scrambling to get my older two kids out the door for school and my littlest ready for church. There would have been barely enough time to shower, pop my hair into a messy bun loaded with dry shampoo, and down a cup of coffee. I most certainly hadn't had time to eat breakfast. Life back then was one big juggling act. I lived in the land of busy at all times, constantly working to get caught up while tripping over the endless piles of stuff in my very, very cluttered home. I figured clutter and chaos just came with this motherhood gig. The speaker began to share with us how she feeds her family of seven. Yes, that's a grand total of five children. I really don't remember much of her talk because of an aside she made partway through. She went from talking about batch chopping veggies to moving her family across the country after one of her parents became ill. She concluded her heartfelt sidestep with the statement, "Thankfully the packing wasn't too difficult because we're minimalists." At that, I dropped both my pen and my jaw and let out an audible gasp. Sitting straight up in my chair, I waited to hear another gasp echo mine. I glanced to the people at my table and then began scanning the room. Had anybody else just heard what I had? My heart started racing, and in that moment, I immediately began to feel lighter. So wait, I thought. You can be a mom and a minimalist? You don't have to keep everything for everybody for all of eternity? She has five flipping kids. I have only three, and I'm drowning here. For the remainder of the meeting, the speaker's voice sounded, in my head at least, a bit like Charlie Brown's teacher. Wah, 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 wah. Frankly, I didn't hear another word. I just sat there, picturing my home without all the clutter. With every passing second, I grew more and more hopeful that maybe, just maybe, I wasn't so bad at adulting after all. Maybe I just had too much crap. Once the meeting closed, I power-walked my way to the back of the room as that speaker poured herself a cup of coffee. Stay calm, Rochelle, I thought. Don't be a weirdo. My internal pep talk had little effect, and I immediately began to bombard her with question after question. How? What? When? For a second, I debated kidnapping her and bringing her home to help me minimize my possessions. But I figured my newly uncluttered home would do me no good if I ended up in prison. Instead, I settled for the online resources she shared with me. After grabbing my then one-year-old from childcare, God bless those childcare workers, I picked up my middle child from preschool and headed toward home. It was almost lunchtime, so I figured I'd give my husband a little ring to prepare him for this 180-degree turn our family was about to make. As I explained where we were headed, he listened quietly before following up with his usual response. Yeah, let's talk about this tonight, which in my experience is code for, did you seriously just call me at work to discuss such nonsense? In his defense, I have been known to get overly excited about outlandish ideas. I'm still waiting for him to agree to the idea of our moving overseas for a few years, but let's be clear, I'd settle for a couple weeks. Something about this particular outlandish idea was different, though. I could feel it. For the first time, I was hopeful there was a reason that for so long I'd felt an irrational dissatisfaction with my seemingly perfect life. Perhaps the solution was much simpler than I thought. Perhaps the answer wasn't found in doing more, spending more, or being more. Maybe the answer was hiding behind less all along. Could all my efforts to keep up, outdo, reorganize, and redecorate actually be the root of my problem? Growing overwhelmed. The year or so leading up to our transition into minimalism was full of change, mostly good change, but change nevertheless. I've always been one who prefers things to remain exactly the way they are forever, amen. But after 11 years as a labor and delivery nurse, I had decided to stay home full-time with our three kiddos. Yes, I wanted to spend more time with my little ones and cherish those younger years. Isn't that what good moms are supposed to say? But deep down, I was hoping that I'd finally, finally get a grip on our home life. When my oldest, Jameson, was born, I had gone from full-time to part-time. When my middle child, Reagan, was born, I went from part-time to per diem, working even fewer hours. While I was cutting back more and more at work, our house remained a disaster. Getting dinner on the table practically killed me, and we were on the go constantly. With the birth of my youngest, Amelia, I finally resigned altogether. I turned in my epidural cartridge key, emptied my locker, and trashed my reliable yet wildly contaminated pair of Dansko clogs. Heading off the floor for the last time, I figured I had just uncovered the secret to a perfectly managed home life. Yeah, if you've ever been a stay-at-home parent for even just 5 minutes, then you're probably silently mocking me right now. Go ahead, I deserve it. Yes, stay-at-home parents are physically home more. However, they are also physically home more. The mess was only made worse by my being at home all the time, and my inability to tidy didn't improve at all. Now there was simply no escaping it. When I was working in labor and delivery, I got to be the hero. I was the one with the direct line to the anesthesiologist at all hours of the night. But at home, I was just that crazy lady who kept begging people to put their shoes and toys where they go. I mean, how hard is it? I thought opting to stay home meant that I was going to have all of the time in the world to exercise, tidy up, organize our space, and teach my little ones how to be polite, at least in public. When I realized that scenario was as likely as a Seinfeld reunion, I felt like a failure. Over the course of that first year, home full-time, I worked hard to keep my head above water, maintain a grateful heart, and a present mind. After all, not everybody has the opportunity to stay home full-time with their babies. I so badly wanted to get it right. Yet with each passing day, I grew more overwhelmed at the state of my home and more underwhelmed by the trajectory I saw my life headed. Was living in survival mode really all there was to this season of life? I vividly recall an evening just a few months prior to my headfirst dive into minimalism. The sense of overwhelm began to overtake me. It all felt meaningless. My husband and I were sitting in our living room, likely watching a movie or scrolling through our phones at the end of an exhausting day of the same old, same old. I remember looking around at our living room, the same one I had cleaned a dozen times that day, as evidenced by my signature piles at the edges of the room. More about those in Chapter 2. And I was just over it. I was over the constant cycle of picking up, sorting toys, and hurrying from one commitment to another. But on top of that, I was over living a life so focused on the accumulation and maintenance of stuff. I desperately needed to get off the hamster wheel, but I didn't know how. I recall feeling as though the walls were closing in around me. I could hardly breathe. I wanted to run. While deeply in love with my little family, I wanted to flee the scene of this life we'd been living. I couldn't put my finger on the problem, but deep inside I knew there was one. I wondered if this perhaps was what they call a midlife crisis. Though I wasn't all that wild about the idea of 34 marking my midlife, when I couldn't shake away the overwhelm, I considered the possibility that the subtle hum of worry I'd experienced my whole life was now turning into a full-blown case of diagnosable anxiety. Was I just losing it? It is said that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And only a few weeks later, I found myself sitting in that auditorium. The case for less had slowly been building within my heart, preparing me for the message of minimalism I so badly needed. It took me 34 long years to learn that I had a too much stuff problem, not a me problem. I had been living a cluttered life and didn't even know it because managing and maintaining stuff is just what we do. We accumulate everything from novelty napkins and silverware caddies to shoes for every possible occasion, all in an effort to simplify our lives and live more comfortably. Ironically, overconsumption often has the exact opposite effect. What we hope will simplify our lives and create a more comfortable and aesthetically pleasing home can, in fact, be the very thing causing us to feel so overwhelmed. January 18th, 2017 was the day it all changed for me. That was the day I set off on a journey to not only right our family's course, but share the benefits of owning less with anyone who cared to hear about them. Within the month, I started a blog called Abundant Life with Less, a fitting title for the journey I was on. What began as an overcomplicated way of holding myself accountable has grown into a passion with thousands of readers from all over the world in all walks of life. While on one hand, it was rather amazing to watch its reach grow, I can't say that I was all that surprised. Not because of me. I had no idea what I was doing. For the longest time, my website was pretty much held together by the internet equivalent of hot glue. I wasn't surprised because I knew I wasn't the only person in need of this message. I wasn't the only one who was also absolutely over it. The transformative power of the clutter-free life can be pretty contagious. Friend, if you're over it, you're in the right place. Messy minimalism is here to escort you off the hamster wheel. If you aren't so sure if minimalism as you know it is for you, well, you're probably right. Minimalism as you know it probably isn't for you. I'll go ahead and spoil the end of the story now. Turns out it wasn't for me either. My messy real life just couldn't keep up with the sparse, immaculate, perfectly curated images typical of minimalism. I would need to redefine it for myself, which is how messy minimalism was born. I wrote this book to share with you a doable, practical, relatable approach to living a clutter-free life. Ironically, the many misconceptions cluttering up the concept of minimalism are keeping people stuck in their clutter, overwhelmed, overly busy, and broke. Here you'll find a simpler approach, one that allows you to embrace both the mess and a life of less. So if you're ready to ditch either the excess or the idyllic version of minimalism you've been pursuing, or perhaps both, I wrote this book for you. Let's get started. Chapter 2, Redefining Minimalism. Your home is meant to hold what matters to you and your family. If something doesn't matter, it's taking space from something that does. Kendra Adachi. Do you remember those optical illusion posters from the 1990s? I know, I try to block all things 90s from my mind as well. We survived the extra-wide-leg jean fiasco only to dive headfirst into bell-bottoms. It was almost as if we didn't want dry pant legs. It couldn't have been all bad, though. Scrunchies, crop tops, and tie-dye are back and better than ever, at least for now. They'll probably be long gone by the time this book gets to you. On top of my evolving sense of style, eventually I stopped singeing my bangs into a perfect cylinder, figured out my Lebanese eyebrows needed to be tweezed, and learned my hair is actually curly, not just a pile of frizz. All it needed was a little product. Who knew? Anyway, as I was saying, optical illusion posters were all the rage. If I remember correctly, there was even an entire store at our local mall dedicated to the sale of such posters. At first glance, they just looked like fuzzy pictures of colorful nothingness. If you didn't know any better, you'd walk right by without giving them another thought. Yet, if you gave it a minute, maybe squinted a little, relaxed your eyes, moved toward and then slowly away from the picture, in time the real image would appear. One moment you'd be staring at a blur, and the next a pod of dolphins would be diving out of the poster at you. Another strange thing about those posters was that once you saw the hidden image, once you knew what it was, you couldn't unsee it. What took forever to come into focus the first time took just seconds every time after. Once you saw it, it became so obvious you'd wonder why it took you so long to see it in the first place. For many, finding minimalism is a similar experience. You can't unsee it. Once I saw my excess stuff for what it was, I couldn't get rid of it fast enough. I dove in headfirst, decluttering my home with a vengeance and wondering why it had taken me so long to get here. Why had I held on to so much stuff for so long? Why had I spent so much time accumulating colorful piles of nothingness? Cluttered by nature. Have you ever witnessed someone do something completely new or different and then thought to yourself, yes, that totally sounds like something so-and-so would do? Yeah, nobody thought that about me and minimalism. In fact, my declaration was met with laughs and eye rolls. I don't blame my family and friends for doubting me. Minimalism isn't exactly a natural fit for me. If you've read The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up or watched the reality show Tidying Up with Marie Kondo, then you know all about the incredibly organized minimalist guru behind the KonMari method, who has been tidying spaces since she was a child. Me, I'm the opposite. For every room Marie has organized and tidied, I've cluttered and untidied an equal number. When I was a child, my family joked that you could follow my trail of stuff around the house to learn exactly how I had spent my day. I imagine my parents were speaking the truth because I have since raised three children who have inherited this skill. I've always lived a cluttered life. My parents kept everything, their parents kept everything, my sisters and I, you guessed it, kept everything. Clutter was just a normal part of home life. Growing up, I had a purse, doll, and book collection. I held on to every movie stub, every project, and every note passed to me during science class, which was a lot, just ask my science teacher, Mrs. Kessler. Everything was sentimental. Everything was important. When my parents would ask me to clean my room, I'd simply form multiple piles of stuff along the walls of my bedroom. If I could clear a reasonable amount of space in the center of my room, I felt my efforts were a success. My college dorm life was mildly better, and that's only because a human who was unrelated to me needed to share my space. So at the time I found myself sitting in that mom group, I was the most cluttered person I knew, holding the title of least likely to ever become a minimalist. It made no sense, and the odds of me pulling it off were not in my favor. Thankfully, that speaker showed me a better way, suggesting I look again, this time with a little more intentionality. What I saw was that my mantra of more, more, more was causing me to settle for a life distracted by stuff in pursuit of all the wrong things. I had been confusing an abundant life with a cluttered one, ultimately allowing my overconsumption to suck from me the very life I was trying to build. My home isn't the only thing that has changed since that day. Less stuff is just the tip of the iceberg once you pursue a life of minimalism. In my experience, it does not take long before everything else comes into focus as well. The trouble with minimalism. I know, the title of this section might seem like a pretty abrupt about-face. Just a few sentences ago, I was singing the praises of minimalism, and now I'm about to reveal its dark side. We can't not talk about it, though. My hope is that by addressing it early on, I can help you avoid the same fateful missteps I took and equip you to spot the red flags of this common minimalist pitfall. I had stumbled into minimalism the good old-fashioned way, word of mouth. But the more I researched, read, scrolled, and watched, the more I learned just how idyllic a minimalist home could become. As I looked for the best methods for becoming a minimalist, I found the internet loaded with an endless supply of images portraying the cleanest, clearest, most clutter-free homes imaginable. Perfectly organized kitchen pantry essentials neatly arranged in mason jars, tidy kids' bedrooms peppered with toys and muted tones without a Disney character in sight, large, trendy mudrooms boasting hooks and cubbies for every household member. With minimalism gaining in popularity and growing as a movement, there was simple living inspiration everywhere I turned. It looked so peaceful, so calm, so perfect, which led me to assume that peace and calm were just on the other side of perfect. It all felt out of reach, although that didn't stop me from trying to get there. We spent our weekends and evenings culling through our excess, delivering load after load to our local thrift store. We carted away the toys my kids never played with, a vegetable spiralizer we hadn't even used once, piles of clothing that hadn't seen the light of day in years, and boxes filled with the most random vases and gaudy tableware. Never before had I felt so light. Month after month, we worked, moving through our home on a mission to ditch the excess. For the first time in my life, I was creating systems and routines that left my home functioning in a rhythm of order. I was now able to wash, fold, and put away our laundry on the same day. All of our kids' toys actually fit in their respective bins and boxes. For the first time in my adult life, I had a meal plan for our family. Me, a meal planner. We could now tidy our house in a matter of minutes and woke up every morning to a clean kitchen. Slowly, my home started to reflect the minimalism I pictured in my mind. Now that we had less stuff, all of our possessions had a place, and everybody in my home knew where it all went, I was in heaven. And then our dishwasher broke. Removing minimalism from its pedestal. On one regular Sunday afternoon, my husband pushed a little too hard when closing the dishwasher door, snapping a critical part in half. With what I admit now to be great hyperbole, everything started to fall apart. I felt like I was watching an apocalyptic movie in which one wrong move causes a beaker to spill over, thus unleashing a chain reaction of nuclear meltdown proportions. I stood there in our kitchen, looking at my husband's face as the gravity of what he had done sank in. In that moment, a wrench was tossed into the gears of my efficient routines and systems. Slowly and simultaneously, they all began to crumble to the ground. Life spiraled out of control, almost in slow motion, and suddenly I was looking at a mountain of laundry, an overflowing pile of dishes, and three wild children pulling everything off the shelves and tossing things strategically at my feet while I wandered helplessly in circles. I couldn't keep up. It was complete and utter anarchy. A broken dishwasher is hardly reason for a total meltdown, but I know you've been there too when something small undoes you. Your husband accidentally takes your keys to work with him, or your five-year-old spills an entire cup of milk that somehow manages to flow into the unreachable cracks between the cabinet and the refrigerator. Those minor infractions can result in a disproportionate response, especially when you're already hanging on by a thread. In the days that followed what should have been just a simple mishap, I started to reconsider minimalism entirely. Was it really an attainable or sustainable lifestyle for me and my family? Maybe it was best to leave this minimalism thing to the single hipsters or the countercultural rebels living in vans down by the river. Perhaps I needed to just walk away and let the cluttering commence. How could one broken dishwasher part bring my minimalism crashing down around me? The problem, however, didn't lie with minimalism itself, nor were my dishwasher, systems, routines, or rhythms to blame. Those can all be really great things, especially the dishwasher. I'm a big fan. The guilty party here was me and the pedestal on which I had placed minimalism. What this broken dishwasher revealed was that my minimalism had become as much about holding on as it was about letting go, except it wasn't material possessions I was holding on to anymore. It was control. Deep down, I was hoping that the perfect implementation of minimalism would safeguard me from hard times and permanently protect me from those feelings of suffocating overwhelm I had struggled with for so long. Having found minimalism as the solution, I now thought it imperative to my well-being that I implement it exactly right. Somewhere along the way, I had gotten turned around. I had become entranced with perfection, forgetting that the minimalist way of life is ultimately about purpose. My number one goal had become making my minimalism look the part. What had begun as me doing a little helpful research in hopes of learning more about this new lifestyle quickly escalated into a race to the finish line. I had become hyper-focused on curating an Insta-worthy living space while ignoring the deeper internal work that needed to take place first. I hadn't paused to consider whether or not those picture-perfect images even fit my real life. Hiding the snarl. The other day, my 8-year-old had a video call with her class while remote learning. A few minutes before I needed to sign her into the online meeting, I noticed her hair was a disaster. I started brushing, but quickly realized this was going to take some work. It was a snarled mess. With just a minute left, I said to her, "You know what? I'm just going to brush the front and then we'll deal with the back later. Nobody will see it." And that right there is exactly what I did during those first few months of minimalism. Yes, I dug deep, reaching to the back corners of closets and through the dust balls beneath our furniture to pull out the physical clutter. But in my effort to get it looking perfect fast, I brushed right over the larger issues tangled under the surface of my heart. The very reasons that led me to the cluttered life in the first place. Perfectionism is a sneaky little thing, and when left unchecked, becomes a way of life. Couple perfectionism's ability to lurk in the shadows of everyday living with the quantifiability of minimalism, and well, you've got a recipe for disaster. Minimalism had become a numbers game for me, and I want to make sure it doesn't for you. Every item we removed from our home felt like it moved us one step closer to perfection, peace, and calm. Instead of making minimalism my own and letting it serve the real life I'm called to live, I had white-knuckled some ideal version I found on Instagram and pursued that, slowly idolizing it in the process. Picture-perfect minimalism is an exhausting journey that will get you nowhere fast. In fact, as it turns out, the pursuit of minimalism can be even more distracting than the cluttered life I was used to. Perfectionism is the very reason so many of us get stuck and turn back before making any real progress simplifying our lives. Sure, perhaps we can pull it off long enough to start a blog, share a few photos on social media, and leave our friends and family in awe of our bare closets. But nothing built on a foundation of comparison, perfectionism, and unrealistic expectations can stand for very long. These things are sandy soil, my friend. As I learned the hard way, it doesn't take much to bring the perfectionist life crumbling to the ground. I'm so glad mine crumbled, though, because it gave me a second chance to do things differently, to rebuild on a foundation of grace and authenticity. Starting from scratch. After that broken dishwasher broke the camel's back, we took a good couple of months off from our decluttering efforts in order to get really clear on what it was we were truly after. Was this really worth it? If so, how could we implement minimalism in a way that best served our family in the everyday messy moments as well as the tidy ones? How could we make minimalism serve our real lives instead of us serving it? What should have been an insignificant hiccup had wrecked my best intentions and revealed a need to overhaul the way we were implementing this major changing course. If minimalism was going to have the positive impact we hoped for, we need to redefine it for ourselves. What slowly began to emerge was a grace-based form of minimalism I call messy minimalism. Messy minimalism is the practice of minimalizing our minimalism. It's letting go of getting it perfect in exchange for a clutter-free life unique to you and your often messy life. Here's a helpful formula if you need to see it mathematically. Minimalism minus perfection plus sustainability times grace equals messy minimalism. Messy minimalism is a flexible form of minimalism that acknowledges our humanness and any natural tendency toward messiness and honors our inability to control all the details. It makes room for dishwashers that break and children who drop more food on the floor during dinner than lands in their mouths. It makes room for aging parents who need us, seasons that require more from us, and school projects covering our dining table for weeks on end. Messy minimalism frees us to love our sticky counters, acrylic paint-stained dining tables, and the spaghetti sauce handprint adhered to the window. It honors our goal of permanently decluttering our space while accommodating our real lives that, at times, get in the way of that progress. On top of it all, it makes room for the people in our homes who may not be as into the idea of living clutter-free as we are. A messy form of minimalism allows me to be me, my family to be them, and life to occur as it will. It's the practice of letting go. I mean really letting go. If you're at the end of your rope, done trying to maintain a perfect image of minimalism that doesn't really suit you anyway, there's a better way, a way of grace, a version of minimalism that isn't at all.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?